Hello, dear friends, and welcome once again to the cozy fireside of the Great Library of Dreams. Do come in, have a seat. Well then, dear friends, tonight I'm revisiting a tale that was actually the very first story I ever recorded and released on my original podcast, Hypnobobs, nearly 11 years ago now. It's a story that I read as a young boy, and it left a huge impression upon me. Indeed, as it does on many readers. And I thought it was high time that I re-recorded it properly and shared it once again with all of you good people. That story is The Graveyard Rats by Henry Kuttner, and it first appeared in the pages of Weird Tales magazine in 1936. Now, I'm old, but I'm not quite that old, and I first discovered it in the pages of a volume edited by the great Ramsay Campbell, a book for children called The Gruesome Book. And certainly Mr. Campbell delivered on that title. Indeed, the sinister and claustrophobic subterranean terrors of the graveyard rats were worth the price of admission alone. And if you want to know more about The Gruesome Book, you can hear me talking all about it on our sister show, the Hypnagoria Podcast, in episode Micrographia 92. Kuttner later went on to become very well known as a science fiction and a fantasy author, and he was often somewhat embarrassed by this very first tale he had published. However, I think you'll agree his embarrassment was misplaced, for it is a true classic tale of terror. The Graveyard Rats by Henry Kuttner. Old Masson, the caretaker of one of Salem's oldest and most neglected cemeteries, had a feud with the rats. Generations ago, they had come up from the wharves and settled in the graveyard, a colony of abnormally large rats. And when Masson had taken charge after the inexplicable disappearance of the former caretaker, he decided that they must go. At first, he set traps for them and put poison food by their burrows. And later, he tried to shoot them. But it did no good. The rats stayed, multiplying and overrunning the graveyard with their ravenous hordes. They were large, even for the Mus decumanus, which sometimes measured 15 inches in length, exclusive of the naked pink and grey tail. Masson had caught glimpses of some as large as good-sized cats, and when once or twice the gravediggers had uncovered their burrows, the malodorous tunnels were large enough to enable a man to crawl into them on his hands and knees. The ships that had come generations ago from distant ports to the rotting Salem wharves had brought strange cargoes. Masson wondered sometimes at the extraordinary size of these burrows. He recalled certain vaguely disturbing legends he had heard since coming to ancient witch-haunted Salem, tales of a moribund inhuman life that was said to exist in forgotten burrows in the earth. The old days, when Cotton Mather had hunted down the evil cults that worshipped Hecate and the dark Magna Mater in frightful orgies, had passed. But dark gabled houses still leaned perilously towards each other over narrow cobbled streets. And blasphemous secrets and mysteries were said to be hidden in subterranean cellars and caverns, where forgotten pagan rites were still celebrated in defiance of law and sanity. Wagging their grey heads wisely, the elders declared that there were worse things than rats and maggots crawling in the unhallowed earth of the ancient Salem cemeteries. And then, too, There was this curious dread of the rats. Masson disliked and respected the ferocious little rodents, for he knew the danger that lurked in their flashing, needle-sharp fangs. But he could not understand the inexplicable horror which the oldsters held for deserted, rat-infested houses. He had heard vague rumours of ghoulish beings that dwelt far underground, and that had the power of commanding the rats, marshalling them like horrible armies. The rats, the old men whispered, were messengers between this world and the grim ancient caverns far below Salem. Bodies had been stolen from graves for nocturnal subterranean feasts, they said. The myth of the Pied Piper is a fable that hides a blasphemous horror, and the black pits of Avernus had brought forth hellspawn monstrosities that never venture into the light of day. Masson paid little attention to these tales. He did not fraternise with his neighbours, and in fact did all he could to hide the existence of the rats from intruders. Investigation, he realised, would undoubtedly mean the opening of many graves, and while some of the rat-gnawed empty coffins could be attributed to the activities of the rats, Masson might find it difficult to explain the mutilated bodies that lay in some of the coffins. The purest gold is used in filling teeth, and this gold is not removed when a man is buried. Clothing, of course, is another matter, for usually the undertaker provides a plain broadcloth suit that is cheap and easily recognisable. But gold is another matter. And sometimes, too, there were medical students and less reputable doctors who were in need of cadavers and not over scrupulous as to where these were obtained. So far, Masson had successfully managed to discourage investigation. He had fiercely denied the existence of the rats, even though they sometimes robbed him of his prey. Masson did not care what happened to the bodies after he had performed his gruesome thefts, but the rats inevitably dragged away the whole cadaver through the hole they gnawed in the coffin. The size of these burrows occasionally worried Masson. Then, too, there were the curious circumstances of the coffins always being gnawed open at the end, never at the side or top. It was as though the rats were working under the direction of some impossibly intelligent leader. Now he stood in an open grave, and threw a last sprinkling of wet earth on the heap beside the pit. It was raining, a slow cold drizzle that for weeks had been descending from soggy black clouds. The graveyard was a slough of yellow-sucking mud, from which the rain-washed tombstones stood up in irregular battalions. The rats had retreated into their burrows, and Masson had not seen one for days. But his gaunt, unshaven face was set in frowning lines. The coffin on which he was standing was a wooden one. The body had been buried several days earlier, but Masson had not dared to disinter it before. A relative of the dead man had come to the grave at intervals, even in the drenching rain, but he would hardly come at this late hour, no matter how much grief he might be suffering, Masson thought, grinning wryly. He straightened and laid the shovel aside. From the hill on which the ancient graveyard lay, he could see the lights of Salem flickering dimly through the downpour. He drew a flashlight from his pocket. He would need light now. Taking up the spade, he bent and examined the fastenings of the coffin. Abruptly he stiffened. Beneath his feet he sensed an unquiet stirring and scratching, as though something were moving within the coffin. For a moment a pang of superstitious fear shot through Masson. Then rage replaced it as he realised the significance of the sound. The rats had forestalled him again. In a sudden paroxysm of anger, Masson wrenched at the fastenings of the coffin. He got the sharp edge of the shovel under the lid and pried it up until he could finish the job with his hands. Then he sent the flashlight's cold beam darting down into the coffin. Rain spattered against the white satin lining. The coffin was empty. Masson saw a flicker of movement at the head of the case, and darted the light in that direction. The end of the sarcophagus had been gnawed through, and a gaping hole led into darkness. A black shoe, limp and dragging, was disappearing as Masson watched, and abruptly he realized that the rats had forestalled him only by a few minutes. He fell onto his hands and knees and made a hasty clutch at the shoe, and the flashlight incontinently fell into the coffin and went out. The shoe was tugged from his grasp. He heard a sharp, excited squealing, and then he had the flashlight again and was darting its light into the burrow. It was a large one. It had to be, or the corpse could not have been dragged along it. Masson wondered at the size of the rats that could carry away a man's body, but the thought of the loaded revolver in his pocket fortified him. Probably, if the corpse had been an ordinary one, Masson would have left the rats with their spoils, rather than venture into the narrow burrow. But he remembered an especially fine set of cufflinks he had observed, as well as a stick pin that was undoubtedly a genuine pearl. With scarcely a pause, he clipped the flashlight to his belt and crept into the burrow. It was a tight fit, but he managed to squeeze himself along. Ahead of him, in the flashlight's glow, he could see the shoes dragging along the wet earth of the bottom of the tunnel. He crept along the burrows as rapidly as he could, occasionally barely able to squeeze his lean body through the narrow walls. The air was overpowering with its musty stench of carrion. If he could not reach the corpse in a minute, Masson decided, he would turn back. Belated fears were beginning to crawl, maggot-like, into his mind. But greed urged him on. He crawled forward, several times passing the mouths of adjoining tunnels. The walls of the burrow were damp and slimy, and twice lumps of dirt dropped behind him. The second time, he paused and screwed his head around to look back. He could see nothing, of course, until he had hooked the flashlight from his belt and reversed it. Several clods lay on the ground behind him, and the danger of his position suddenly became real and terrifying. With thoughts of a cave-in making his pulse race, he decided to abandon the pursuit. Even though he had now almost overtaken the corpse and the invisible things that pulled it. But he'd overlooked one thing. The burrow was too narrow to allow him to turn. Panic touched him briefly, but he remembered a side tunnel he'd just passed and backed awkwardly along the tunnel until he came to it. He thrust his legs into it, backing until he found himself able to turn. Then he hurriedly began to retrace his way, although his knees were bruised and painful. Agonizing pain shot through his leg. He felt sharp teeth sink into his flesh and kicked out frantically. There was a shrill squealing and the scurry of many feet. Flashing the light behind him, Masson caught his breath in a sob of fear as he saw a dozen great rats watching him intently, their slitted eyes glittering in the light. They were great misshapen things, as large as cats, and behind him he caught a glimpse of a dark shape that stirred and moved swiftly aside into the shadow, and he shuddered at the unbelievable size of the thing. The light had held them for a moment, but they were edging closer, their teeth dull orange in the pale light. Masson tugged at his pistol, managing to extricate it from his pocket, and aimed carefully. It was an awkward position, and he tried to press his feet into the soggy sides of the burrow so that he should not inadvertently send a bullet into one of them. The rolling thunder of the shot deafened him for a time, and the clouds of smoke set him coughing. When he could hear again, and the smoke had cleared, he saw that the rats were gone. He put the pistol back and began to creep swiftly along the tunnel. And then, with a scurry and a rush, they were upon him again. They swarmed over his legs, biting and squealing insanely, and Masson shrieked horribly as he snatched for his gun. He fired without aiming, and only luck saved him from blowing a foot off. This time the rats did not retreat so far, but Masson was crawling as swiftly as he could along the burrow, ready to fire again at the first sound of another attack. There was a patter of feet, and he sent the light stabbing behind him. A great grey rat paused and watched him. Its long, ragged whiskers twitched, and its scabrous naked tail was moving slowly from side to side. Masson shouted, and the rat retreated. He crawled on, pausing briefly, the black gap of a side tunnel at his elbow, as he made out a shapeless huddle on the damp clay a few yards ahead. For a second he thought it was a mass of earth that had been dislodged from the roof, and then he recognised it as a human body. It was a brown and shrivelled mummy, and, with a dreadful, unbelieving shock, Masson realised that it was moving. It was crawling towards him, and in the pale glow of the flashlight, the man saw a frightful gargoyle face thrust into his own. It was the passionless death's head skull of a long-dead corpse, instinct with hellish life, and the glazed eyes, swollen and bulbous, betrayed the thing's blindness. It made a faint groaning sound as it crawled towards Masson and stretched its ragged, granulated lips in a grin of dreadful hunger. And Masson was frozen with abysmal fear and loathing. Just before the horror touched him, Masson flung himself frantically into the burrow at his side. He heard a scrambling noise at his heels, and the thing groaned dully as it came after him. Masson, glancing over his shoulder, screamed and propelled himself desperately through the narrow burrow. He crawled along awkwardly, sharp stones cutting his hands and knees. Dirt showered into his eyes, but he dare not pause even for a moment. He scrambled on, gasping, cursing, and praying hysterically. Squealing triumphantly, the rats came at him, horrible hunger in their eyes. Masson almost succumbed to their vicious teeth before he succeeded in beating them off. The passage was narrowing, and in a frenzy of terror, he kicked and screamed and fired until the hammer clicked on an empty shell. But he had driven them off. He found himself crawling under a great stone embedded in the roof that dug cruelly into his back. It moved a little as his weight struck it, and an idea flashed into Masson's fright-crazed mind. If he could bring down the stone so that it blocked the tunnel! The earth was soggy and wet from the rains, and he hunched himself half upright and dug away at the dirt around the stone. The rats were coming closer. He saw their eyes glowing in the reflection of the flashlight beam. Still, he clawed frantically at the earth. The stone was giving. He tugged at it, and it rocked in its foundation. A rat was approaching, the monster he had already glimpsed. Grey and leprous and hideous, it crept forward with its orange teeth bared, and in its wake came the blind dead thing, groaning as it crawled. Masson gave a last frantic tug at the stone. He felt it slide downwards, and then he went scrambling along the tunnel. Behind him the stone crashed down, and he heard a sudden frightful shriek of agony. Clods showered upon his legs. A heavy weight fell on his feet, and he dragged them free with difficulty. The entire tunnel was collapsing. Gasping with fear, Masson threw himself forward as the soggy earth collapsed at his heels. The tunnel narrowed until he could barely use his hands and legs to propel himself. He wriggled forward like an eel and suddenly felt satin tearing beneath his clawing fingers, and then his head crashed into something that barred his path. He moved his legs, discovering that they were not pinned under the collapsed earth. He was lying flat on his stomach, and when he tried to raise himself, he found that the roof was only a few inches from his back. Panic shot through him. When the blind horror had blocked his path, he had flung himself desperately into a side tunnel, a tunnel that had no outlet. He was in a coffin, an empty coffin into which he had crept through the hole the rats had gnawed in its end. He tried to turn on his back and found that he could not. The lid of the coffin pinned him down inexorably. Then he braced himself and strained at the coffin lid. It was immovable, and even if he could escape from the sarcophagus, how could he claw his way up through 5 feet of hard-packed earth? He found himself gasping. It was dreadfully fetid, unbearably hot. In a paroxysm of terror, he ripped and clawed at the satin until it was shredded. He made a futile attempt to dig with his feet at the earth from the collapsed burrow that blocked his retreat. If only he were able to reverse his position, he might be able to claw his way through to air. White-hot agony lanced through his breast, throbbed in his eyeballs. His head seemed to be swelling, growing larger and larger, and suddenly he heard the exultant squealing of the rats. He began to scream insanely, but he could not drown them out. For a moment he thrashed about hysterically within his narrow prison, and then he was quiet, gasping for air. His eyelids closed, his blackened tongue protruded, and he sank down into the blackness of death, with the mad squealing of the rats dinning in his ears. This podcast was produced by Mr. Jim Moon, with music from the Eldritch Light Orchestra. If you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving us a review or a rating so other people can find it. If you really like the show, consider buying us a coffee at coffee.com/hypnagoria or becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/hypnagoria, where subscribers can get exclusive new shows every month and access the Patreons only podcasting vault. For more nonsense, call into our site, hypnagoria.com, where you can find all manner of essays and articles on the weird and the wonderful, plus my other podcasts, plus links to YouTube and all the usual social media gubbins. This has been a Great Library of Dreams production.